This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it is a Throwback Thursday today, 1973. That's the music that you're hearing. 1973, Secretariat won the Kentucky Derby on this date. Some good music this morning. My goodness. All right, has the baseball been good the month into the season? Gabe Lax joins us on a progressive guest line from USA Today. How are you, my friend?
Oh, doing good, Tony. Interesting month, to say the least.
Very much so. I feel like the bigger story is the scoring drought. Maybe others in your mind. Let's get to the scoring drought, though. It's easy to sort of go, well, we didn't have a full spring training, but is that the reason, or is there some other factors in play here?
Yeah, so many factors. I mean, you never quite totally know whether it's going to be pitchers ahead of hitters or hitters ahead of pitchers, but it's basically every factor has gone against the hitter this April and into May. Starting with the baseball, which clearly is performing strangely, which clearly seems to be having a reaction to being stored in a humidor in all ballparks now. Mm-hmm. And then you throw in the fact that the pitching staffs were allowed to go as the roster was expanded because of the lockout, and you could carry limitless pitchers. I thought that might have helped offense because it meant good pitchers were not pitching as much, and maybe some unqualified pitchers were eating up some innings, and maybe they'd give up more runs, more home runs, or whatnot. But that's just not happened. Like, it seems like everybody out there is nasty. It seems like the baseball is impossible to hit, and basically every meaningful offensive metric is down, and it's remarkable.
For the most part, how are teams dealing with pitchers? I mean, we had the big story about Clayton Kershaw and in the perfect game and all of that being taken out. The Mets had a combined no-hitter. From that standpoint, how are teams dealing with the fact that pitchers are really taking a little longer to get used to getting into like 7th, 8th, 9th inning?
You know, it hasn't been too bad thus far. You're seeing guys getting relatively deep. Walker Buehler's shutout was really kind of an eye opener. Like, okay, yeah, it really can be done. But the fact that runs are down almost a run per game, the batters aren't seeing any more pitches than they used to. There's a lot of things in their factor to keep them going deeper. And I think we underestimated how ready they were too. These guys work out all year. They were in shape. Obviously nobody knew when the lockout would end. A lot of people learned their lesson in 2020. A couple guys got caught napping, not realizing that the COVID shutdown would end and they needed to report to spring training. So, they got about midway through spring training, through the shortened spring training. And so I think it was relatively easy to treat the first couple of regular season starts in 2022 kind of like, the end of spring training where you're trying to get 6 innings anyway. And so it's been a relatively smooth ride for them, I think, to stretch out like it's a normal year. And then that's aided by the fact that the offensive environment has just been so much in their favor.
All right, the Yankees just had an 11-game win streak snapped last night. Look, we get it. There's stars on that team. They're kind of loaded. But is that eye-opening that they did that? They're 18-7?
It is. And, to me, most eye-opening is how quickly they cleaned things up from last year. This was a team that was not playing well and prone to offensive droughts. And, the insertion of Isaiah Kiner-Falefa at shortstop. It's so interesting to me that they basically punted offense at catcher. They finally kind of decided to end the Gary Sanchez situation back there, which sacrifices a lot of power and a lot of offense. And obviously moving Gleyber Torres off of shortstop was way overdue, and he even still represents some liability at second base. But, to stress defense at shortstop and catcher at the expense of what could have been, pretty significant offensive expense, it has really worked out well for them. They're playing well, and their stars are hitting everybody, basically, with the exception of Joey Gallo. So it's to me, it's not just the star-studded power, but the way that they're playing. And I think that gives them the greatest hope for sustainability. Maybe not at the level that they're at right now. You know, they may not play 700 ball all year, but right now looking like the best team in the AL East, and you know, maybe it'll end up being them. Two-way kind of thing with them and the Jays, but they're clearly putting themselves in a good position early.
Staying in the division, and again, long way to go, but is Boston's five games under 500, was that predicted? Was that thought that this team would not be as good as other Red Sox teams in the past? I know they got rid of some guys, but I mean, at the same time, they're still the Red Sox.
Yeah, they always leave you wanting another move or two at right. various points, whether it's during the preseason or at the trade deadline or whatnot. The thing that I find really surprising is that, you know, just that they're not hitting. They have to hit. They're too good of a team not to hit. You do kind of wonder about Trevor Story. I mean, it is tough reporting late to spring training. It remains tough to switch leagues, even, you know, when everything is so homogenized this year, that AL is still a different beast than the NL. You know, these guys are too good to not get it going. You know, Kike Hernandez isn't going to hit 200, I don't think. You know, and they've gotten, you know, if you ask me before the year, you know, they probably needed another starting pitcher. But, you know, Michael Wacha has been amazing. You know, Nathan Eovaldi, yeah, legitimate ace. You know, Tanner Houck has been good. Garrett Whitlock has been good. You know, so that piece of it is there. It's just, will they hit? And I think they will. The question is, you know, how deep of a hole do they dig themselves before the bats heat up? And, you know, what's going to be their path to victory once they do start hitting? Will the surprise pitching hold up? You know, sequencing worked out great for them last year. They probably outpunched their potential a little bit just because they got proper contributions at the right time. So far this year, it kind of seems like things are working out a little bit differently, and we'll see if they can, you know, make the offense and defense coalesce at some point.
And the Mets are off to a very good start. And with the Mets, I mean, the last couple of years, I mean, the jokes kind of write themselves of some of the things that they've done. They've got a number of good players. They've got a number of guys that can contribute, but they've never really been able to put it together. It does seem, and maybe I'm wrong, it does seem like Buck Showalter is the right guy to guide this. Are you feeling his hand on this team early this season?
Oh, absolutely. He's so good at his job, and everything he does is with such conviction, and everything he does is with such purpose. You know, it's tough to, you know, so much is made about his type A personality and the many well chronicled details of that. But, you know, guys listen to him and buy in. And, you know, I think the eye rolling that might have accompanied him back in the day is now accompanied by players who want to hear his message. And kind of going back to the sequencing point, for me, this team took the leap when they acquired Chris Bassett, and suddenly that's three great major league starters in your rotation, and that's always a tipping point for me. When you have a great chance to win three out of five nights, you're probably going to win, you know, 600, play 600 ball. With DeGrom out, Tyler McGill has stepped in, and that's the kind of thing that needs to happen in a year when a team is going to be great. Do we buy into Tyler McGill and that he'll keep it up for 20 to 30 starts? Who knows? But they've given him this so far, and if he can hand the baton to Jacob DeGrom when and if DeGrom's ready to come back, you know, that just shows you that things are working out really well for this team this year.
We had a good story the other night, Mike Clevinger returning Wednesday from Tommy John surgery. And now it looks like everybody on the San Diego Padres can pitch. They're going to get Blake Snell soon. They have a bevy of riches there. Is that enough, though? Can we have a horse race to the end with the Dodgers by the Padres?
I find it so ironic that the Padres are slept on this year.
Right.
All the hype that accompanied them the last 2 years. But no, the point you raise is really valid, you know. And again, Joe Musgrove just kind of flies under the radar, does his thing. Sean Manaea has been a great addition. And they've gotten Mackenzie Gore into the mix. They've gotten his feet wet. They'll see what they have with him. So, yeah, it's really interesting how well they're playing without Fernando Tatis. And it's maybe a subtle reminder that, you know, Manny Machado maybe has been the best player on this team all along when you just look at the entire game that he brings to the table. So, yeah, I don't know if they can keep up with the Dodgers just because the Dodgers are, you know, a 667 kind of team always, you know, the fact they pretty relatively easily quieted the Giants these last two games. Interesting. Yeah. It very well could be a two-team race, and I think it will be interesting to see which two or three teams it is when you look at the Padres, Giants, and Dodgers. So, yeah, that's going to be a very fun and very very tight race to chronicle all summer.
One other question before we let you go, Gabe, and I love talking to you, man. I love talking to you about this sport.
But
the sport does have, and it comes up all the time, especially with video and social media and grabbing clips and computers, that umpiring is always under scrutiny all the time. Is there going to be a point where Major League Baseball is looking at some of the way it's been talked about on social media, where like, look at this pitch, it's not even close to the strike zone with my computer enhancements? Are they going to have to start thinking about ways to incorporate this technology?
They're definitely thinking about it, you know. And again, I kind of go the opposite route. I think these guys are really good, and they'll miss some. And you know, is that the most egregious thing to happen? You know, do we have to be fully optimized all the time? That's, you know, these are kind of deeper existential questions that fans in the league have to face. My biggest case against robot umps is, how many positions on the field can you automate before the game gets really boring? Right now, we basically have automated middle infielders. You see a ball hit up the, and don't get me wrong, I'm not against the Chase Utley slide rule. I mean, it's probably good to not have guys get blown up. But, you know, a ball gets hit up the middle, there's no tension now. It's an automatic double play because you know the guy's not going to get taken out. So suddenly the shortstop, the second baseman, they're kind of robots out there. You get an automated strike zone in there. Not only do you have robot umpires, you have robot catchers. So suddenly that's three positions on the field where a guy's value and the interest in kind of seeing him excel is taken away. So, again, lots of unforeseen consequences I don't think people think about. I'd like to see people stop screenshotting strike zones and just enjoy the game a little more. But I don't know, that ship may have sailed.
Really good. Gabe, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much, as always.
All right, you got it, Tony. Take care, man.
You got it. Gabe Clax, Gabe Lax of USA Today, talking baseball 1 month into the season. Well, I got to do a temperature check on this sport every now and then just to make sure it's 1 month in. It's very difficult. It's like if we did in the NFL like two games into the season and we were like, what do we make of the Kansas City Chiefs going 1-1? But he makes a good point. Like in baseball, it's, you get rolling along and you're five games below 500 and you look and there's a team in a division flying through, and yeah, I get it. There's more playoff teams and whatnot, but if you have to go like weeks to make up a couple of games sometimes, because just the nature of the game, you know, you win three, you lose two, you win two, you lose one. You need a kind of run like the Yankees were on, like 11 in a row, to sort of then go, all right, we're kind of back up. And if you don't do that and you pick up a game or two here, it does take a little bit longer. But yeah, every now and then you just could do a quick check on the temperature. All right, before we go to break, the Steel Battery product line features three tiers of performance. You can find the right family of products for your needs, whether you're a landscaping pro or occasional home user. Steel's battery tools have the power to get the job done on a single charge. That's important because, man, you don't want to keep going back to keep charging up your battery-powered equipment. It performs just as well as gas-powered products, and the benefits of battery include no fuel costs, low maintenance, lightweight, quiet, zero exhaust emissions. Whether you're a pro on the job or a homeowner with a weekend to get a job done, you won't find Steel at Lowe's, Home Depot, or always at a local Steel dealer. All right, Tony D, Ron Culver, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.